activate the view screen and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 109 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, is Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens in Wausau, Wisconsin. How you guys doing?
Super awesome.
Woohoo!
You guys just getting back from a traumatic trip to Menards?
I don't know that it was traumatic, but it was nerve trying. It was patience trying.
You want to briefly sum it up?
Well, we purchased stuff that they didn't have in stock. Well, we purchased wood, and the size that we purchased, they didn't have in stock, even though the computer said that they had it in stock. So when we actually bought longer pieces that we could cut down to the size and said, hey, we'll just take the pieces and go, they were like, the guys at the gate are not going to let you go because it doesn't match what's on the piece of paper. You have to have it cut here. So.
Yep.
Great. And then you...
I will have to give a hand to the high school kid that helped us out.
Yeah. Once we finally got someone to help.
Yep. And we made it very abundantly aware that to him that we really appreciated him taking the time to handle it, because it was, wow, it was rough.
Yeah.
Do they have one of those big saws that is just like half the size of the wall? Like,
no.
Those are awesome.
Maybe.
There was like a Black Decker. Yeah.
A foot blade diameter.
Yeah.
It wasn't very big.
Yeah. They should have given.
Because part of the problem was we bought MDO board, and we had asked yesterday if we could get it cut down there, and they're like, no, we can't cut like paneling, only 2x4s and just boards, like actual sticks of wood. So that created part of the problem, because then we could have been able to borrow a friend's van to put everything in, but it wouldn't fit otherwise.
Okay. And that's our that concludes our new feature here on the Alien Invasion podcast. Wood talk.
Improvement talk.
An improvement session.
More wood next week. We'll be talking about particle board next week. So stay. Tune in for that.
Oh yeah, like you guys missed out on my awesome burn. Like I've got like a bandage covering it up.
Ew! How'd that happen?
I was adjusting the height of the lawnmower last week, and my arm bumped against the engine that was still hot, and so I've got a burn that's probably that long and that wide. So I guess an inch and a half long and maybe not quite a half inch wide in the widest spot. So I told Brad, like, I kind of wanted to draw a couple of eyes on my arm, like a couple of dots to make it a smiley face, because that's what it looks like in shape, like a really happy smiley face. So.
And that concludes Scar Talk here on the Alien Invasion podcast.
Oh, I should have said aliens. They got messy with their abduction this time.
Okay. Got to bring it back around again somehow. Back to the subject at hand. Which is the aliens? The aliens are everywhere, by the way. This is the show where you talk about them. In film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. We break down the show into three sections. The news, the craft corner, our spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us live, good luck. No. We're a little bit off schedule this week. Doing it on Thursday, usually do it on Wednesday, and we're doing it later because there are problems at Menards. So if you want to keep up with us, and we'll tell you when we're going to be live, just follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, and we'll put it out there when we're going to be live. And one more thing before we get into the actual show, patreon.com/galacticnetcast. If you want to help support our fledgling network of 3 years, you can donate as little as $1 a month and become a patron, an official patron of Galactic Netcasts. patreon.com/galacticnetcast. As little as $1 a month, and you can help support us push out some great sci-fi and geek culture content. So, without further ado, here we go with the show.
In the news.
And Mr. Brad Ludwig has the first story. Go, Brad.
We're going to start with the story from Blaster.com. And the headline is, these two new SETI programs might finally hold the key to finding aliens. Now, for those of you that aren't aware, SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, has really been looking for signs of intelligent alien life for the past, about 30 years or so. So the way it's been done is just basically shooting or trying to look for radio waves or other, mostly radio wavelengths to see if anybody is shooting out anything at us. Because obviously we've been doing radio and television all these years, so planet Earth is actually like this radiating point of radio and television waves or, intelligent communication. And that's what SETI's been doing. And they're going to be using multiple telescopes now with a system called Panchromatic that's actually going to be using multiple telescopes to scan a number of wavelengths from 30 stars near the sun, looking for strong signals that have been beamed into space. And SETI is also going to be rolling out, an interplanetary eavesdropping program that will search for messages beamed between planets in a single system. So not just looking for planets that are just beaming from a omnidirectional standpoint, that they're beacons of radio and television waves. They're actually looking for planets that might be beaming information back and forth to each other.
And that would be a good sign of
intelligent life.
Yeah, intelligent life and technologically advanced societies.
Yes, exactly. I like some of the bits of this article. when discussing the projects at a speaking engagement, Berkeley SETI Research Center Director Dan Wertheimer noted that since we're polluting space with everything from top 40 hits to old I Love Lucy episodes, which have reached thousands of stars by now, maybe aliens are sending something our way in a similar fashion, and we just kind of really need to focus our search instead of maybe searching everything around us, maybe pinpointing a number of likely candidates and moving from there.
So this is more like fine-tuning than like we're being more specific than general with these new searches.
Exactly.
There's some great examples in pop culture of that whole, throwing out all these radio waves, radio and television waves. Very beginning of the movie Contact. You guys have both seen Contact, right?
Yes.
Not
I love that movie.
So
really? Oh.
Yeah, you guys.
You own that?
I don't think I own it, but I really love that movie.
Yeah, it's what's his face that did Forrest Gump?
Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah, along with the same composer that did Forrest Gump. So the music sounds very similar. But my point was, at the very beginning, it starts with whatever was being broadcast at that time when the movie came out. And I think one of the first things you hear is Spice Girls song, Wanna Be, I believe.
Yep.
And then the farther back you go, the older the radio waves become, and it finally stops, and there's just silence. And the camera just stays there for just a few moments where there's just – you hear nothing in space. And then I believe it goes back to the Earth again. And that's one example. And then there's another example. I think that we talked about this on an episode a long time ago. I think it was one of our picks. I believe it was my pick. It was an episode of what was that Spielberg TV show, anthology show?
Oh, Amazing Stories.
Yeah, Amazing Stories. There was an episode of about these aliens who came to Earth – and they modeled their society after like an I Love Lucy or something like that.
Yeah, they were actually putting on their own programs based on those shows as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I have one question about the first method that they're going to introduce and start using. How is that particular method different from the way we're doing it now? I understand the second one, you're looking for signals between planets or between bodies in space. But what's different about the first one?
So they're actually – right now we have like a huge ear on the Earth, right? And we're listening for everything everywhere. What they're going to be doing now is they're going to be pointing telescopes specifically at 30 different stars that are close to us.
Okay, I understand.
So instead of just putting a big cone on planet Earth and trying to hear everything, we're actually more specifically focusing on these 30 stars that seem to be prime candidates for possible intelligent life. I don't know if it's not specific in this story, if they've found exoplanets there, but I would assume so.
Yeah.
Then focusing on those, seeing if there are signals there. And I would assume that if they've done an exhaustive search on those 30, then they can move on to more, because, I mean, we're constantly finding more exoplanets and star systems and stuff. So a more pinpoint approach to gather that information and instead of just kind of, hey, did you hear that? Where was that coming from?
Yeah.
So now they're actually specifically pinpointing certain things.
Well,
certain
weren't
areas.
They kind of doing that before? I mean, I think they just had a general, like, ear to the whole space, but didn't they, like, specifically, like, search one part of the sky and then move to another part of the sky? And, like, they,
yep.
As I recall.
I think one of the biggest criticisms of that is if you're searching one spot and then you're like, okay, we're going to move over here. Are you going to miss something over, you know, at another spot?
Okay.
If you've moved away from it, is there a possibility of missing that?
Got it.
So.
Okay. Well, it makes sense. Cool. And like you said, Brad, the more exoplanets we discover, the more – I wonder if they can figure out, like – Anessa, can they figure out the age of an exoplanet by just the technology that we have now or no?
Sorry, you asked me when I was – big bite.
Brad, what do you think? Do you think they can figure out the age of planets?
I was talking so much because I was trying to buy Vanessa time to eat. boy, I don't even with like gas chromatograph and stuff like that, they can only – I don't know if there's a way to tell.
I don't think – that I know of, I don't
– They might be able to figure out the age
the way that
the
they
star.
Would be – yeah, they would have to take a look at the star to see – what type, because there's the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, and it's basically a classification of stars, their different magnitudes, and it kind of covers like the life cycle of a star. And so they would be able to get a general idea of how old a planet is based on the star that it's orbiting. But I don't know that they could pinpoint exactly when this, like, the planet came about. They can just kind of ballpark it.
Okay.
Without being able to actually go and collect samples and stuff. I mean, we can tell what the atmosphere and whatnot contains to see if we can, you know, if it contains life through spectroscopy. And we can identify the star and get a pretty good idea of how old it is based on where it is in its life cycle. But
I meant spectroscopy.
Aging the actual...
I said gas chromatograph. I meant spectroscopy. Whoops. Big difference.
So
I didn't pick
up.
Yeah,
they can get an idea how old the planet is just with the star, but I don't think they can get like incredibly accurate that way.
I wonder if that new telescope that they're building in South America is going to be able to figure that out. Because isn't that one going to have the ability to actually see planets? Actually, because right now we just can kind of figure out they're there by mumbo jumbo stuff. But this new one's going to actually...
Well, I mean, it's not really mumbo-jumbo. You look at a star and see if the light...
No, I know, but that's just my way of describing it. I know exactly what you mean to say.
Yeah, it's not as accurate as this telescope. I think that one that we talked about was going to be ready in 2020?
Closer to like 2025 or 2030.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It must be 2025.
Okay. All right.
It's massive and it's high up, and getting equipment and stuff's gonna take time and assembling.
Well, and they've got to blast that mountain to flatten it too.
Yeah, I think they actually just did that, but that's just the first step, I'm guessing.
Have they finished?
I don't know.
Blasting
not sure.
And removing all the debris, because, yeah, that's timely, too.
Yeah.
And budget issues and whatnot. I'm sure they have a grant and,
yeah,
like, other people to help pay, but that's the other thing you got to keep in mind.
All right. Well, sure. We'll be sure to follow the progress and update you as we get more information on this. Okay.
Word.
So that's the first story. So good luck, SETI. And I'm guessing one of those planets that will eventually get radio waves from, one of those planets contain the Predators. You know the ones I'm talking about. The Predators from the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from, 1986 or 84? Somewhere around there. Brad?
Probably closer to 86.
86? Okay.
I was going to say it was late 80s.
Yeah.
I'm not 87.
Quite. Okay, 87. The reason I bring this up is there is a new Predator movie that's in the works. It's not a reboot, says the director. When news recently broke that a new Predator movie was in the works, rumors quickly spread that it would be a reboot. The franchise was going to be reset, starting from scratch. But that is not the case. According to Collider, got in touch with the film's director, Shane Black, who we all know from Iron Man 3. That's one of his big ones. He said that he and screenwriter Fred Decker have something different in mind, and he says it's not a reboot as far as Fred and I are concerned, adding, why start over when you've got all this rich mythology yet to mine? So Black continued to say that he was not a fan of reboots, thank God, but can really get behind inventive sequels and the idea of expanding and exploring the existing Predator mythology rather than hitting the restart button. Of course, I mentioned that he recently did Iron Man 3. So what do you think, Brad? Looking at his work, I don't know if you know of any other movies he's done, but we've all watched Iron Man 3. What do you think chances that this will be a pretty good...
I can tell you that it's going to happen during Christmas. That's one of the common themes of his movies. Christmas appears in the film.
Really? Weird.
Yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3, Lethal Weapon 2.
Shane Black did Lethal Weapon 2?
Yes.
Really? I thought he was like a younger director.
Let me double check. I was pretty sure. Sure, now I can't. Oh,
here,
man.
Let me do a quick IMDb thing here.
No, it was directed by Donner. Where?
Yeah. I didn't think that was right. I'm pretty sure that...
He wrote it, though.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Nope, the writing credits for Lethal Weapon 2, Jeffrey Boehm wrote the screenplay. The story was Shane Black and Warren Murphy, and Shane Black created the characters.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
The other characters that were added to the Lethal Weapon mythos.
Okay.
At that point.
Well, that's going to be cool if they actually continue that whole Christmas theme. You know, put a little Predator in your Christmas. That'd be cool.
Shane Black is a very interesting director. I've seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and it's an amazing film. If you haven't seen it, you need to. Again, Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer.
He likes working with Robert Downey Jr., it seems.
It would seem so. They do get along very well. So, let's see, what else?
Did you guys,
Shane Black.
Did you guys get a chance to see that last Predator movie, Predators, where the humans were taken off Earth and taken to that, it was like a sanctuary.
It's like a haunted sanctuary.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. With Adrian Brody. Yes, I did see it.
Adrian Brody. Yep.
Yep. That's just fun to say, Adrian Brody.
Are you guys excited about this, the possibility for a new Predator movie? Do you think we need one?
I never really kept up with the series, so I don't really care.
That's a good question. I mean, I know that they're saying that it's not going to be a reboot, so I guess that's kind of refreshing in that regard. But it'll be interesting to see. At least with this, there's not a whole lot of baggage that you have with a specific character. It is a race of beings mm-hmm. that are known for hunting. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of, well, we have to take into account in the last film, you had a wife and, you know, all that stuff. That's not going to be come into play.
Yeah, and there's, so. And there's not actors getting old like Ripley from the Alien series.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, so I think they, without that baggage, they've got, they do have that, they say here, the rich mythology to work with. And I really agree with that. I think that they could do something good without having to deal with character-based baggage.
And don't you think reboots are kind of the easy way out, in a sense? I mean, it's okay, it's a great way to reinvent something that was already there, like Star Trek. They kind of messed with the timeline and things changed a little bit. But don't you think it's just kind of a cop-out, like it's you know, you're being lazy and doing things your way, kind of?
Not really. I think doing that, doing a reboot, if you want to try to print money, that's what you do. Because typically, if you sign an actor to a film, they usually sign them to, like, a multi-film deal. Do you know what I'm saying? So when they signed up Robert Downey Jr., it was, your contract is for 3 films. So they're looking to make franchises out of movies as much as possible to try to generate money long term. So if you reboot something that has gone by the wayside, you could start over, then you can try to make it into a franchise if it becomes successful.
A la Spider-Man versus The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of a...
That's a different, that's different because it's the film studio trying to keep the rights to Spider-Man, right? By releasing a film every 3 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, and Tobey Maguire and everybody else, you know, were uninterested and or getting too old to play the characters that they played before, so then you reboot. It's getting old, I think.
Yeah.
I hope it's getting old.
Comic book comic book stuff is a lot more acceptable to reboot because they reboot the comics all the time. So it's not that big of a deal for comic book movies.
The interesting thing about comic books versus movies is comic books don't really deal with real time. You know what I'm saying? If you've got a run of... Let's go this route. Justice League had run as a comic book for decades, but Batman didn't age decades. Do you know what I'm saying? Comic book time is completely different than real time.
Yep.
So your characters never necessarily age. So when it comes to translating that to film and using real actors and actresses, they do age. So you've got that to work around. So...
And they've also got alternate universes in comics.
There is that, too.
Yep.
DC now has 52 different universes. Jesus. So.
Oh, that's what the new 52 means? And that's an entirely new universe?
Well, try to make long story short. At one point in time, they had made multiple Earths to deal with the fact that the Golden Age characters, there was a huge gap between Golden Age, like Flash and those characters. There was the whole comic books created delinquency and truancy and all this other stuff. So comic books were just put to an end until the 60s. So then they brought them back, but they redid the characters to make them more contemporary. So DC had to deal with that, and they decided to do different universes. And then as time went on, they decided editorially that they wanted to bring all that stuff together. So they made one universe. And then they made another decision many decades later to separate the universes again, and now there are 52 universes. So it's interesting because if you watch the show Arrow, I know we're off the topic of aliens now, although we were dealing with different universes and stuff there for a second. One of the characters, his designation as a police officer is Delta Charlie 52.
Oh, hey.
DC 52.
Yeah. Got it.
Yep.
Neat.
So, and that's Laurel's father, the cop. So, anyways.
Oh.
And that's is that the guy?
See, I'm gonna have to like pay attention when I resume watching Arrow.
Oh, There's so many. I giggle like a little schoolgirl when I see certain things that they mention that are sort of almost throwaways. But, you know, if you were a comic book nerd to the degree that some people are, and myself included, you catch little bits here and there, and you're like, oh, my God, they put that in there. That's so cool.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does that, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he giggles, like, the entire time. He's like, oh, I totally get that reference.
That's funny.
Adorable.
Those shows make me, like, sit on my phone the whole time and look this stuff up because I'm still learning comics. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot out there for you to catch up on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. I love how we just, no matter what, we end up on the subject of comic books. It's cool.
Well, it was still related because we're talking about rebooting, which also leads to different ways of dealing with it, like Star Trek did by creating a whole different timeline reality sort of a thing to make a whole new franchise without stomping on all the pre-existing history.
Yep. Yep. Got it.
So it was related.
Okay. Let's move on. Final story of our news. Anessa, I've been waiting to hear this one. This is an interesting story.
Yes. So the story is titled, Where Does Your State Rank on UFO Sightings? So how many UFO sightings are reported? And yesterday was World UFO Day, so happy belated World UFO Day, everybody.
Oh, wait a second. We have to play something in honor of World UFO Day. Let's see, what can it be? We can play the applause. Or, no, this is even better.
Let's have a party. I think we'll have a party now. Let's have a party. It's great when you get started out.
It's been a while. Okay, so that's our little party for World UFO Day. Continue, Anessa.
So I actually found this on Vox.com, and they checked out the extensive public records of the National UFO Reporting Center. And that's an organization that collects reports of UFO sightings and refers to itself as, quote, America's foremost UFO reporting agency. And they use this to figure out which state is the best at spotting UFOs. The National UFO Reporting Center, or NUFORC, New Fork, has been operating since 1974, but its database goes back much further. The oldest record is from 1561. Not sure how that's possible. German cylindrical woodcut. The submission notes, I would think that Hans Glasser, the woodcutter, had better things to do than spend months on a wood carving that was too ugly to sell if it weren't intended as a star map of a UFO star sighting. So apparently this German dude back in 1561 witnessed a UFO sighting and decided to do a woodcut of it. Kind of cool. But anyway, so let's see. Thanks to New Fork, the people at Vox.com have created a couple of tables and charts showing where the states rank. So we've got Arizona and New Mexico, who report more than their share of UFOs. Would-be alien spotters in both states are probably influenced by the lore of Roswell, New Mexico. And I'm, where a UFO allegedly crashed in 1947.
And Area 51's Nevada, right? No, that's not Nevada. Never mind.
No, that's, Arizona and New Mexico have a lot of UFO sightings, surprisingly enough, considering there's Area 51 in Nevada. They don't really have that many UFO sightings reported.
Mm-mm.
It's kind of weird. Maybe the men in black are hard at work in Nevada. Other than Arizona and New Mexico, however, the trend is pretty clear. Northern states spot the most UFOs, and the deep south spot the fewest. But there might be a confounding variable here. The chart from The Economist shows when people are most likely to report seeing UFOs. So during working hours, there's not really a whole lot of activity in UFO sightings. During drinking hours, which would be from about 4 o'clock,
4:30.
5 o'clock.
Yeah,
5 o'clock to 10:30, 11. Those would be considered drinking hours, and there is a big spike in the number of sightings that you see or that are reported. And then that number drops once you hit about midnight and later because everybody's probably asleep and not really doing much observations, which is kind of interesting. Drinking hours, high spike. So So to estimate which states are most likely to report UFOs when they're not drinking, they took the map that I was just talking about and controlled it for sobriety by multiplying each state's UFO spotting rate by the percentage of people who have healthy drinking habits according to the Centers for Disease Control. So basically the percentage of adults who haven't engaged in binge drinking in the past month. Alaska, for example, has a UFO spotting rate of 5.44 per 10,000 people, but 89.8% of Alaskan adults told the CDC that they hadn't engaged in binge drinking in the past month. So Alaska's sobriety-adjusted UFO spotting rate is 5.44 times 0.898, or 4.29. So you can do math. So now they have a map. If you guys go to the to our website and check out the link that we'll include in the show notes, you can see these charts as well. Or if you're watching the show, then Brad has some of these up on his screen.
Brad, you want to scroll up a little bit more?
UFO sightings per capita.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I love the look of this particular chart with the with the working hours, drinking hours, and sleeping hours.
Yeah, you've got a little wrench by the working hours, a bottle by the drinking hours, and a crescent moon for the sleeping hours, and a little UFO in the corner.
A classic flying saucer UFO.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that just, and it really spikes right at about 2,100 hours.
Mm-hmm.
2,100. Yeah. So when people are getting really lubed up, and it doesn't seem to say if it's Central Time or Pacific Time or what.
They're just taking a general idea from each time zone and factoring it all together.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because
yeah,
I mean,
that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah, people on the East Coast are going to be sleeping when the people on the West Coast are going to be hitting their peak drinking time.
I'd like to also mention the fact that the most green states, one of the most green states, is Washington State, and pot smoking is pretty prevalent in the state of Washington. In fact, it's legal in the state of Washington. So,
but it wasn't when this data was taken, though.
Okay, but still.
I don't know how prevalent it was.
I don't think you needed.
To,
I don't think you really needed to have it legalized to have the amount of people smoking pot in that state. So I think.
Well, Colorado's way down there, though.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You've got Colorado.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as green.
And to be honest, for the amount of drinking that Wisconsin does and is known internationally for doing, we've got a 2. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah. So you can't really, I guess, take pot into consideration when you've got another state to compare. So it appears once we factor in sobriety, it appears that the Midwest loses its ability to spot UFOs entirely when alcohol is not involved. But the top states for UFO sightings would be in the, like Dave said, Pacific Northwest, also Upper New England. They're still this top spot when adjusted for sobriety. Washington State in particular is still the UFO capital of America. It's seen 6.75 UFOs per 10,000 people, and its sobriety-adjusted UFO spotting rate is still higher than most states unadjusted, meaning even when you take in account like sobriety, like it's higher than when people are drunk and spotting UFOs in other states. So, yeah. Yeah, it's just a really interesting article and image to see because, I mean, I've heard a lot of stories in Texas about UFO sightings, and yet we apparently don't really report that much. So interesting when you actually collect some of the data.
Yeah, when you break it down into the numbers.
Yeah, if you break it down, map it out, plop it on a chart.
Quantify it, baby. Quantify it.
Yeah.
All right.
So I highly recommend taking a look at these graphs and see if the state in which you reside reports as many UFOs as you think it does or does not.
I think the lesson we can take away from this story is if you want to see UFOs, drink.
Then you'll just call everything in the sky a UFO.
Ah, who cares? You'll be drinking. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Drink away.
Woo-hoo! Drink all the drinks.
Yes, exactly. Drink all the drinks. I think that's our show title. All right. All right.
Sweet. It's been a while since I've come up with the show title.
No, you had the last show title. It was,
Did I?
Yeah, it was, what was it? something. Hang on.
I don't remember.
If you want to see all of our...
I guess we could look it up. There's yeah. the internet.
Galactic
the
Net...
Hello Kitty episode?
Yeah, Hello Kitty, all things.
All the things.
All the things, yeah. That was your...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's right, I forgot about that.
All right, let's move on to... Well, before we do the Craft Corner, I got to let you guys know that you can reach out to us. Reach out. Just by emailing us, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. I promise never to sing ever again. Galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. We've also got a voicemail number that you can leave a message, and we might play it back on the show. That is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, and we value your feedback, either positive, negative, or just saying hi. We want to hear from you.
Hi.
Doesn't matter why, doesn't matter how, just say hi. All right, let's play this.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It is time for Craft Corner, our look at a different unidentified flying object. Could be something from real life, or it could be something from fiction. I chose to grab something off a MUFON report, and it's not something specific. It's not a specific shape. It's just basically a report of an unidentified flying object. And you mentioned, Brad, that Wisconsin famous for their drinking. Well, this report comes to us from New London, Wisconsin.
Hooray!
So I forget, where is that in correlation to Wausau, New London?
I have no idea. I'm new here.
Is it Milwaukee
give
area?
Me a second.
Central state? Central part of the state?
New London is more towards, if I remember right... Oh, it's closer to, it's like northwest of Appleton, Wisconsin. So it's, boy, this really means nothing to anybody outside of Wisconsin.
So basically it's the central part of the state still, but to the right, towards the east.
Okay. So more...
It's, if they're familiar at all with where Green Bay is on a map, it's to the left.
Okay, got
it. It's west of Green Bay.
Okay, all right.
West of Appleton.
So this happened on June 29th, 2014, just last week. A lighted Ferris wheel object. Ferris wheel in the sky. So here is the report from the MUFON site. On Sunday night, June 29th, at about 10.05 p.m., this is the person reporting it, my dog woke me up to let him outside. I walked out my front door and noticed lightning in the distance near the Wapaka area. As I was
Wapaka, sorry.
It's been a while. As I was looking in that direction, I noticed a small, round, bright light heading in my direction. I thought it was a plane at first, since the Wapaka Airport is in that direction, about 18 miles from my home. But as it got closer, I realized that it was not a plane, but a round, lit-up object that was similar to a bike tire with many spokes and were all lit up in different colors and blinking white lights all around the outside ring. Continued coming towards my property at a steady level, about 40 feet above the ground, moving at about 5 miles per hour. And even with a steady wind, it was not affected by its movement, or it wasn't affecting its movement. It was about the size of a hula hoop, maybe larger. And the thing that most amazed me was that it did not make any sound. When it was right across me, or from me, in my yard, about 20 yards away, it went over the top of my shed, barely clearing the top. Let's see, continued through my backyard, small woods just above the treetops. Once it passed my property, all the lights kept blinking on and off until I could see it anymore, and heads towards New London and beyond. So what I think this is, I think this was a balloon of some kind. People like doing this. They get a balloon, they put lights on it, they put it aloft, and they see what happens. That's my opinion. Because this sounds like it was very small, going very, very slow. And I don't know if the pictures that we have in the document from this report are actually from the report, because he said it was at night, and these pictures are clearly during the day. So I don't know what the hell's going on here.
Maybe because he saw the moon, he thought it was night. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, drinking Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't know.
It sounds, doesn't it sound an awful like somebody would launch a balloon with lights on it? This is something that I believe me and Brad talked about doing at one point. Never got around to it when I lived there. But it sounds like something like that. I mean, it's multicolored lights, it's small, a hula hoop shape or size, and it's only like 20 feet off the ground.
Hmm.
Or like maybe, or make maybe a drone of some kind.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe it could have been a drone, and if they were drunk.
Yeah, so... I don't know. I think if it was, I think if it was farther off the ground and maybe larger, I would have thought it was possibly a craft from somewhere else, aliens involved. But it's small. It's not very far off the ground. I'm guessing it's a terrestrial object of some kind.
Yeah, I would too.
All right. So we call shenanigans all around.
Shenanigans!
All right. That should be our thing. Whenever we do a report, we grab a report off the internet from MUFON or whatever. We should have a shenanigans meter. 3 shenanigans.
Yeah, this one's pretty shenanigan-filled.
Yeah. It's shenanigan-y. Shenanigan-y? No, that doesn't work.
Shenanigan. It's painfully in shenanigans.
Yeah.
Shenanigan.
See? Yeah, it's hard to do.
I'm sober.
All right, so there you go. That's our craft corner for the week. I'm going to try to grab more of these off MUFON because it's really interesting getting these actual eyewitness reports. So, all right, let's move on to our picks. These are things that we have consumed into our body in some way, using our ears, using our eyes. I don't know. I don't know if we've ever had a food pick, but I guess we could use our mouth for a pick.
Well, Brad did talk about the restaurant in, was it Fargo?
It's or in Sioux Falls?
In Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
So that was close to being food related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The UFO-themed restaurant.
Okay. All right.
Area 51. Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's see what Brad has got this week. Maybe it's a restaurant. Maybe not. Let's find out. Brad, what's your pick?
Well, it's not, actually. It's a part of a webcomic that I read. I haven't done a webcomic in quite some time. I'm doing a...
You're doing...
I think I'm doing... No. I
Hi, that's me.
I screwed up my screen share.
Deception.
It's me looking at me. That's weird.
Daveception.
What's real?
I don't know. Okay. There. Okay. So here's my screen. The this comic book... Or I'm sorry, webcomic series is called League of Super Redundant Heroes. Now, yes, it is hero-based, but they're doing a storyline right now. The mayor of this this particular city that the story takes place in, the mayor is an alien warlord who has managed to learn how to kind of conquer, not necessarily through his fists and his axe that he likes to use, but actually through political means. And he's a very, very interesting character. He's Mayor Kurg. Mayor Kurg the Conqueror. And in this particular arc that they're doing right now, an alien has come to overtake the city, and he, in the previous strip, tore off his business suit. He gave an address to the citizens of the city. I'm not going to tell you the name of the city because it's kind of fairly not safe for work. he gives the address. Actually, I'm going to flip this. They're doing a couple of story arcs at the same time. So... he rips off his suit to declare that he's going to take care of the situation and is upset with his speechwriter because it turned into more of a WWE speech than it did an actual political, you know, I care of the citizens of this burg and I'm going to take care of it. He's been in a few other story arcs as well, and usually it involves either comedic situations where he's an alien warlord conqueror who's had to try to maneuver politically and the situations that come around that, or it's a flat out, you know, things are going wrong in the city, supervillains are doing stuff, and he needs to step in because the superheroes of the city aren't up to the task. So, League of Super Redundant Heroes, you can find it at superredundant.com. And it's a hoot.
I wanted to ask you, Brad, what's the redundancy? Do they have, like, too many powers? Is that the redundancy, or what's redundant?
Partially, it mostly follows the escapades of a few people that share a house together. You've got a character that named Good Girl, who is her goodness is her power. But she also has a halo. If she gets into a fight and her halo gets removed, then she becomes Bad Girl and becomes evil, which is sort of a play on a run of Supergirl for DC, where Lex Luthor used a different form of kryptonite that sort of removed her moral compass, and she became sort of evil, not necessarily evil, but more self-serving, and no real thought of empathy or other people, or, you know, just really became more self-serving. So it's kind of something with that. Your other main character is Laser Pony. And he is visually impaired, and he is visually impaired because his powers are optic blasts, and the first time he used his power, it destroyed his eyes. Now, he can still use these beams, but he wears sort of protective goggles till he needs to use the ability, which is kind of a weird play on Cyclops of the X-Men.
Is he an actual pony?
No, he's a human being, but he's dressed in sort of a pony-esque sort of a gimp suit sort of a thing. So he's got, like, a little tail that's strapped to him on the back. I mean, it's not, like, nasty or – I mean, he's completely covered, but it's just, like, a weird thing where he's dressed as basically a pony. It's really weird. You've got the Gyro Gnome, who is a – he's a little person essentially, and he has enhanced strength, and he is sort of an inventive character. He invents things, and he likes to punch people in the groin. There's another character, and I can't remember what her name is. But she's sort of she's kind of a wannabe hero. She doesn't really have any powers, but she's more of a sidekick, and she got stuck wearing kind of a sort of a skimpy cowgirl sort of an outfit.
Okay.
They don't really fully explain her deal, and she was kind of originally sent to be a spy on that house, and she ends up kind of falling in with them and kind of she stops being a spy and generally wants to help people. And there's all the goofy things about this. The other interesting thing about this is there's actually, I believe that there's three different artists that do this strip, three or four. And so they have slightly different styles in their art, but not so much that you would notice it. They intentionally try to keep sort of a same look to the whole, the strip as a whole. But you can, over time, you can kind of, and if you follow the notes that are under each strip, you can kind of see who some of the different artists are, and they do different web comics, but they've kind of come together to do this League of Super Redundant Heroes.
Okay, strip. Cool.
So
awesome. Sounds
very interesting.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the next pick, which is Inessa. This looks like an app or a game.
It is an app. Well, it's a game. I believe there's an online version of it. It's called Tower Madness Zero, and it's a tower defense game. So essentially you have a field, and on one side of the field you've got an enemy, and the other side of the field you have whatever it is that you need to protect. And you have to build various weapons to try to prevent the enemy from making its way across the field and taking one of your items, or destroying it, or whatever the case may be. In this particular case, you are trying to protect sheep. You're trying to protect your herd, or I guess flock. And the people you're trying, or the things that you're trying to protect the sheep against, are aliens. And they want to steal your sheep so they can make their emperor an awesome new scarf. So.
Of course. Why not?
Yes. it's available for Android, and it's available for iTunes. I believe on Android, the Google Play Store said it was like $1. On iTunes, it's free. And I'm pretty sure they both have things that you can buy, like in-app purchases. So I played a bit of it. It's actually pretty entertaining. You've got various types of guns. You have like a ray gun or cannon, and then you've got one that shoots missiles. And periodically, this you'll see the top of a flying saucer fly across the screen, and then out comes more aliens. And the bulk of them have been greys, and they're small, and they waddle when they walk. It's really adorable.
Cute.
And then there's also these red insect-looking creatures that will try to make their way across. And as you get further and further in, like, for example, the first game that you play, you have 26 rounds that you have to defend your sheep against. And as these things keep make their way through the barrier and steal your sheep, then your sheep count gets down. And, of course, for me, because I'm awesomely horrible at stuff like this, on the last round, they got my final sheep. So, yeah, there's that. But, no, it's actually a pretty entertaining game. I recommend it. You also have larger-sized greys that'll come waddling in. And there's also some that have a crown. I guess those are the leaders of the pack. Got various kings and queens, or whatever you want to call them. But no, it's actually, like I said, it's pretty entertaining. The graphics aren't like intense or anything, but if you enjoy playing tower games where you have to defend something, then I recommend giving it a shot. And the music, oh my gosh, the music of the game is so redneck.
Awesome, because yeah, you're on the farm, you're protecting the sheep, so why not?
Yep. So, yeah, it's very upbeat. You got your banjo going. You're like, yeah, I'm ready to defend my sheep. Yeehaw!
And you're like, get off my land.
Get off my lawn, crazy aliens.
All right, good enough.
Sheep. Crazy critters.
All right, thanks, Inessa. So go try
that
if you like those kind of games.
I guess I could have done like a screen share.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We're running late anyway, so we should probably get on the ball here and talk about my pick. It's our final pick of the week. The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact, and the Government Cover-Up. I've seen this movie, you know, the cover for it on Netflix for a while now, and I finally bit the bullet and watched it the other night. And it was pretty good. It's just a basic alien history of encounters and abductions and the whole history of the mythos of, conspiracies and everything. It covers the gamut. It's an award-winning documentary, although I couldn't figure out what awards they won, that explores the possibility of an extraterrestrial presence on Earth. The film takes a look at topics like alien abduction, human-alien hybrids, the military's reverse engineering of alien technology, and the government cover-up of anything related to extraterrestrials. And what really grabbed me was the amount of people that were interviewed for this documentary. People like Whitley Strieber. He was the author of Communion, as we remember. Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He, of course, was the sixth astronaut on the moon. Paul Hellyer, who we've talked about before on the show, the former Canadian defense minister, and a few others. Linda Moulton Howe, if you're a listener of Coast to Coast AM, the talk show that talks about this kind of thing, she is a regular contributor to that show. And who is the other person I wanted to mention? Because he just had a heart attack, too. Oh, crap. I don't see his name here. Somebody else that's very highly regarded in the field of UFOs and encounters and abductions and all that kind of stuff recently, like, had a heart attack on Friday. Cause I saw the MUFON Twitter account said we wish him hope he gets better, that kind of thing. Anyways, so if you want a good hour and a half of UFO goodness, we're talking. Abductions, we're talking people talking like hypnosis, a lot of hypnosis video in this documentary. And what I thought was cool was the not only the famous people that I mentioned, but the legitimate people with very important jobs, like radar people that man radar, like airplane. Airport radar people. What are they called? Air traffic control people.
Air traffic controller.
Yeah, yes. People that should know about these things. Like, they know the difference between the moon in the wrong, mistaking the moon or swamp gas for a UFO. These kind of people know the difference. And these are the kind of people that they interviewed on this documentary. Like, legitimate, not crazy, drunk farmer from Wisconsin. These are like real people that with real high level jobs interviewed for this documentary. So I would recommend it if you are into this kind of thing. It's called The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact and the Government Cover-Up. So there you go. Those are our picks for the week. Before we get out of here, which we do have to do because we are running a little bit late, go to galacticnetcasts.com and click on the picks page. I think it's still called picks. I change the names up all the time, so I forget what it's called. I think it's swag or picks.
Consistency.
Yeah, I forget what it is. Just go to our website. You'll figure it out. You can find our picks, and that way, that's another way of supporting our show. When we can find them on Amazon, we put them up there, and a portion of the proceeds goes to us. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and circle us on Google+. You'll be up to date on everything that we do, including the latest news in the world of science fiction, science, and geek culture that we put out every single day. Also, want to go back to the website real quick. Something that we added this week is a page where you can watch all of our shows randomly. You click on the page, and you may get our latest show from, like, last week, or you may get, like, episode 40 of The Alien Invasion when I was still in Wausau and Vanessa was still in Texas. So check it out. It's on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. Subscribe to us on Twitter or on Stitcher or iTunes. We're on Stitcher as well, and we appreciate all the support that you can give us. So before we get out of here, final thoughts. Brad, what do you got?
I'm looking forward to watching something sci-fi and alien-based soon.
You're staying very, very general. That's a generalized final thought.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
In other words, I've got nothing.
Okay. All right. Anessa, what's your final thought?
6-word science fiction story from io9.com let's pick one. Stunzels. The story is When Lawns Are Mowed, Grass Screams.
Say again, you were breaking up a little bit.
When lawns are mowed, grass screams.
Oh, that's creepy to think about. I don't want to think about that. So I'm not going to think about that. But thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. That's going to do it for this alien invasion. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
All right.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.